The title of this talk is, I'll send it to you by email, okay? It's one of those days where I figured out what I was going to talk about this morning, actually yesterday, but I didn't get to write it down until this morning. And let me go ahead and read it. It's a how-to article. I will send it to you now. It's called How to Do a Short Retreat, and it is it's a continuation of the talk I gave a couple of weekends ago about the importance of retreat and the importance of pilgrimage, and so this will be part two of that series, and I may do a third part about how to interact with shrines and how to interact with Buddhist monuments, which are called stupas. And so I may do a third part. So you may get a total of three talks on the subject of pilgrimage and retreat. And part of the reason that I wanted to talk about these things was because our home monastery of Karma Triana Dharma Chakra is hosting a program next week by Kempo Carter Rinpoche on the Bodhisattva vow. It's a very amazing program in which he takes 2 full days of this great master. He's 93 years old now. He takes 2 full days to give the Bodhisattva vow gradually and slowly, a little bit at a time, while explaining each part. Long-form Bodhisattva vows, that's correct. And, you know, so it's kind of nice, you know. And so he's doing that next weekend at our home center, Karma Triana Dharma Chakra in Woodstock, New York. And so he's, I'm encouraging everybody who has the capability of getting over there to go. I know the rooms are now probably taken up for that, but I've heard that that our friend Ryan Jewell, who used to live here in Columbus, has now moved to the Kingston area. And he and his partner, they are opening their homes to people who want to stay. And his partner, she has some rooms at the Y where she works. She actually works, I think, at the YMCA in Kingston. And they have some rooms that can be rented at the Y. So there's a couple different ways. If you want to see me, if you want to go and see me after, I can give you the contact information for Ryan. And then you can find out how to get to this thing. It starts this coming Friday night, and it's about a 10-hour drive, depending on how fast you drive, to Karma Triana Dharma Chakra, which is about 680 miles east of here. And so the program will conclude sometime on Sunday afternoon of next week, and then you can drive home with your crew. I recommend carpooling. So, at any rate, that's just a little bit about that. I also bring you, before I start today, I also bring you some greetings from our Dharma brothers and sisters in Gainesville, Florida, where I was teaching last weekend. They wanted a teaching on the Medicine Buddha, so I was there last week giving that teaching to them. And they did a raffle while we were there, and they gave $200 to the Columbus KTC Rebuilding Fund. So Lama Losong and his crew have been really wonderful and kind to us, and they said that they would try to help us with other fundraising as time goes along. So it's great to have family all over the country. And it is really like that, because you go into the Karma Taksim Choling Center in Gainesville, and it's like coming into the KTC here. Friendly people, nice environment, good practice, and so it's just, it's nice. Also next weekend, we're going to host our annual fall retreat at Glen Helen State Nature Preserve, and you can attend that also. I don't know who our registration people are for that. We may have registration online. I don't see anybody here who's doing registration, but if you want to check the columbusktc.org website, you can click on the link to the fall retreat and sign up. I'm sure there's plenty of spaces. We're in a children's camp at the Glen Helen Nature Preserve, and we start on Friday night with a small talk, and then we do talks in the morning on Saturday, and in the afternoon on Saturday, and then in the morning on Sunday. The topic is bringing compassion to life, and it is about how to use slogans such as the mind training slogans to develop love and compassion for yourself and for others in everyday life. So that's what we're talking about today. So I'd like to start today's talk with a short prayer. And if this is a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. And if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind and think that by reciting this prayer, you're dedicating this session to all sentient beings. It's the four-line refuge prayer, and I'll be reciting it in Tibetan one time. O sanje chudang so chi cho nam la jang chu par du dan ni kyap su chi da ji chin so ji be su nam ki dro la pen chi san che dro pa sha o pa den sa we lam ha rin bo che ta gi chi o pe de ten cha la ka den jen bu go ne che sun te Kusum tugging a troop sound to song. Okay, thank you. As you know, this is the time of year when it begins to get a little chilly outside, and we begin to turn inward a little bit, if for no other reason than it's a little cold outside, and we need to try to warm up a bit. And so this is a good time to be talking about retreat. In fact, I was just talking to one of my Dharma friends today, and they said that they're planning on taking a day or two away. And because there are very few Buddhist retreat centers in Ohio, in fact, I don't know of any, because of that, they're planning on going to a Catholic retreat center, which is really great because today we're having our Dharma meetings in the Martin de Porres Center at Ohio Dominican University. I am familiar with Martin de Porres Center, and I'm familiar with Ohio Dominican mostly because I was taught by Dominicans when I was in grade school. And then when I returned from a three-year retreat and my teacher asked me to become a teacher, I was a little bit nervous about the whole thing, so I decided to be a teacher part-time and to be a newspaper writer part-time for a few years after I first returned from retreat. And one of my newspaper assignments brought me here to Ohio Dominican, specifically to St. Mary of the Springs, which is the home of the Order of the Sisters of Peace. And so it was a delight to come here to interview former Dominican nuns who had taught in the schools in Newark, Ohio, where my newspaper was located. And I got to meet my first grade teacher. And I cannot tell you the love, joy, and delight. And to be honest, I have totally forgotten her name. I can still see her face. And she looked just as wonderful as she did in 1960 when I met her. She's retired, so she's living here. And so it was just wonderful to see this person who had meant so much to me in my life, who tolerated me spelling third grade words on a table in my, on my desk in the first grade, and dealt with my continual talkativeness and so forth and movement. She was very kind to me and very good to me. So I have a happy connection with her, as well as with the Dominican Order, as well as with this wonderful place. So it made me delighted to know that they are the folks who are taking care of us during the High Holy Days at Tiferet. And we'll be moving back to Tiferet this week. So my friend is going to a Catholic retreat center for her Buddhist retreat. And you might say, well, how does that work exactly? Well, the best retreat centers allow you to set your own schedule. And you can use meal times as anchors in your day. I tell everyone that if you are planning on doing a personal retreat, that there are a few things you can do to prepare. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a how-to list today. Like I say, this is related to the talk I gave a couple of weeks ago about the importance of retreat. We do retreat because it is not easy to practice the Buddha's Four Noble Truths in our everyday life. The Buddha taught that suffering is part of life, suffering has a cause, suffering has a solution, and then there is a path that leads to the end of suffering. We remember that suffering is physical suffering, emotional suffering, spiritual suffering, and we also remember the second noble truth, which is that the cause of this is clinging and grasping. Clinging and grasping is the cause of so much of our suffering. And so the solution to all of this suffering is letting go. And then the path to letting go, that's the path of practice. That's the path of learning, and that's the path of learning and practice and study. And so a retreat allows us to leave aside our everyday life. Somebody else cooks for us. Somebody else takes care of our basic needs. And we have a protective environment in which to practice letting go. So in a way, you could say that the environment of the retreat is our first means of letting go. We let go of the menu. We might like the food, we might not like the food. We let go of the menu. We let go of the time of day. Maybe we like to eat at 10 in the morning, but they serve it at 7. So you have to kind of cope with that. And so forth and so on. We let go to the schedule. And we let go to the space, which is different than our everyday space. Our everyday space can be very calming, but it can also be very distracting. I know some people who say they don't like to meditate at home so much because they have so many distractions. They see the pile of laundry that needs to be washed. They see the pile of dishes that need to be put away. They have all kinds of distractions. And their desk, it's piled high with work or bills that need to be paid. And it's so distracting. So being able to leave that behind for 1 or 2 days for many people is a bit of a relief. And so we enclose ourselves in a time frame. 1 or 2 days, we enclose ourselves in the environment of practice, the retreat space. We enclose ourselves in our retreat room. We enclose ourselves on our retreat seat and in our attitude of love, compassion, and devotion. And so in that way, we have sought solitude. Those of you who remember the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, they were written by Wilchel Togme way back centuries ago. But he talked about how easy it is to practice in a secluded place. He said, the mind of attachment to loved ones wavers like water. The mind of anger toward enemies burns like fire. The mind of ignorance that forgets what to adopt and what to discard is greatly obscured. Abandoning one's homeland is the bodhisattva's practice. So by abandoning one's homeland, that doesn't mean that one turns away from it with a sense of disgust or dislike, One is detaching with love from one's environment. One is detaching and being balanced about one's involvement. One can love from afar. The next verse says, when harmful places are abandoned, disturbing emotions gradually diminish. He's talking here about the benefits of a retreat space. Withdrawing from your everyday cares when harmful places, by harmful, he doesn't mean that they're actually toxic or noxious. What he means is that they attract our mind and make us distracted. When they're abandoned, disturbing emotions gradually diminish. You know, it's like when you're a kid and your brother or sister is poking you, it feels so good when they stop, right? And so when we let go of those things that poke us, then our negativity gradually diminishes. Without distractions, virtuous endeavors naturally increase, mostly because there's nothing else to do. Being clear-minded in your meditation, definite understanding of the Dharma increases. Resorting to secluded places is the Bodhisattva's practice. And so by undertaking a one-day retreat or a two-day retreat, you can reduce your distractions and increase your virtuous mind. Unless, of course, you remain attached to all those things you left behind, thinking, I want my coffee, or I want my internet, or I want my this, or I want my that. If we can't really let go, it's a little harder to do retreat. So that's why it's sometimes best to go to a place that's not yours. Although I do have friends who are good at doing retreat in their own homes. They turn off the telephone, they ditch their cell phone, they don't watch television, they don't turn on the radio, they don't read the paper for one day. I've even had a friend who told all of their friends in advance, I'm sorry, I won't be responding to phone or text for the next 48 hours. Deal with it. But I'll be back after that. And so the idea is that by creating that kind of space, they give themselves space to practice in. But of course, then they have to practice. That's often difficult. Retreat sometimes is a better idea in our heads than it is an actual reality. And that's why it's good to create a schedule for yourself. And if you have a schedule, that makes it a little easier. What I tell people is that you can use the traditional Tibetan model of a day schedule. Day schedule is one session of practice in the morning before breakfast, one session of practice after breakfast, one session of practice after lunch, and one session of practice after supper. Four sessions. Before breakfast, after lunch, and after supper. And it's best to make these practice sessions short rather than long. Because if you make them too long, they'll become like a weight that you can't carry. If a person is doing a five-day retreat, it's a little easier to do this. But if you're just doing a one-day retreat, I would make those practice sessions 1 hour long. 1 hour before breakfast, 1 hour after breakfast, 1 hour after lunch, and 1 hour after supper. And you can even break that hour down into smaller pieces. You could break the hour down into opening prayers. The refuge prayer, like the one we just recited, is a great way to start any session of practice. Saying in the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, I take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. What a wonderful prayer. And you can start your session with that. And then you can practice quiet sitting meditation for a short period of time. And then, if you like, you can do another short session of mantra recitation, such as the simplified mantra recitation of the Bodhisattva of Compassion, Chenrezig, Om Mani Padme Hum. There's a short recording online that you can download and a short text of Chenrezig that you can download from my website. And you can do the practice of Chenrezig at home. Just a short one. Not like the long one we do here. Just a little shorter. And then after that, you can do another session of sitting meditation or maybe even compassion meditation. Do you remember the teaching on Tonglen, the compassion practice? Where as you breathe out, you think you give goodness to all beings. And as you breathe in, you think you remove the suffering from all beings. You can do that sort of practice as well. So your session doesn't have to be big or ambitious. It just has to be small, manageable, and comfortable. Kempo Carthur Abishay said, if you try to push your mind too hard and put too much ambition into your retreat, it won't go so well. He says, the harder you press on the mind, the more your mind will rebel. I've used this example before. It's like putting a cat in a closet. Kempo Carthur Rinpoche has used this example before. He said, if you accidentally close your cat in the closet, the cat will go insane trying to get out. But if you open the door just a little bit, the cat will feel comfortable and will fall asleep in the laundry basket. Still in the closet, still comfy, but at rest. So the idea here is that the more we try to imprison our mind with ambition, like, oh, I'm going to do the best retreat ever, etc., etc., the more we try to imprison our mind with this attitude, the more thoughts we'll actually have. It's like it creates a fountain of thoughts. And so if we can just have these short one-hour sessions, this is wonderful. It's even better if you can be silent. People say to me, how could I possibly be silent? I did it for 9 months in 3-year retreat. Well, I take that back. Total silence for 6 months. What they call functional talking for 3 months, where you could talk, but only to ask someone to accomplish a task with you. Only talk that you needed, and that was 3 months. And then after that, no talking at all for 6 months. Unfortunately, we all wrote notes, so we kind of violated the spirit of it. But we were able to not speak for that period of time. And what my friends told me they learned from that period of silence was that they didn't need to impress anyone. They didn't have to entertain anyone. That there was a freedom in not having to represent yourself as something to someone. And that they found by not having to communicate with others that their selfish mind naturally began to be quiet, to be quieted. And so if you can be silent during a one-day meditation retreat, that's even better. Or you can have little rules around it, like, if my mom calls, I will answer. This type of thing. But at least this way you reduce a little bit. And by doing this, you have that seclusion, that time away, that where you can really just relax into your practice without having to worry, oh, in 5 minutes I have to be here, or in half an hour I have to be here and do this and do that. And what that does is it naturally relaxes your mind so that you begin to relax those muscles of grasping and clinging that make so much suffering in this world. Plus, you get to turn your mind toward something that's positive. You get to turn your mind toward mantra or meditation that allows us to feel more balanced and more stable. And so now you heard me mention a moment ago a 5-day retreat, and I've actually met people who've done this. And if you're going to do more than a 1-day retreat or a 2-day retreat, you can gradually increase how much time you spend in your meditation. The Tibetan model for this is the phrase that they use, they say, make your retreat like a barley seed. Shorter on both ends and more in the middle. Bigger in the middle, small on both ends. And so that means on the first day of a 5-day retreat, you would meditate for an hour morning, early morning, late morning, afternoon and evening. The next day you might add 15 minutes. Hour and 15 minutes. And then on the third day, it would be the longest period of time, maybe an hour and a half. And then the next day you'd go back down to an hour and 15. And then the last day you'd go down to an hour. The reason for this structure in retreat is that this way you gear up and then you gear back so that you can re-enter the world with a little more grace and a little more integration of all that you've learned and experienced. And so this is a little bit of advice about how to structure a 1 or 2-day retreat. And I recommend it to everybody. I know it's not easy. So even if all you can do is a 1/2-day retreat, that's a lovely thing to do too, where you do your one session in the morning before breakfast and one session after breakfast. And then at lunch that your retreat ends. If you can do something like that, it's lovely. For folks who are doing mantra practice as their daily practice, you can substitute the little schedule of practice that I described for whatever practice you like. Like if you're doing Chenrezig accumulation, if you're accumulating Om Mani Padme Hums, you can make that the main emphasis of your 1 hour of practice. And do some silent meditation at the beginning and the end. And always end every session with a dedication of merit so that you can dedicate the goodness of your practice so that you don't even hold on to the goodness of your practice. And so if you're a person who is doing the Mahamudra practice, namely the Mahamudra preliminaries of Nundro, the refuge practice, the bodhicitta practice, the Vajrasattva mantra, the mandala practice, or the guru yoga. If you're doing these Mahamudra practices, you can also place them in your day of practice. So there's all kinds of ways that you can arrange those hour sessions of practice, always starting with refuge, always ending with a dedication. So it's my hope that this little short talk about this has been helpful to you and that it might inspire you to do some retreat. We're going to be having our retreat, as I mentioned, at Glen Helen next weekend, and there will be these little sessions of practice and study happening during this retreat, so you're welcome to join us. For a day, a 1/2 day, you could be what we might call a commuter student, where you would drive into Glen Helen in the morning and drive out in the evening. You can do it any way you like, but we're here for you. Now, because of our schedule today, we have a special schedule today because this is the last day of our sojourn here at Martin de Porres. We're going to need everybody who's here to help us pick up something and take it out and help us pack up to go back to Tiferet Israel. But I have about 15 minutes before we have to do that. So I'm wondering if during the next 15 minutes we could maybe discuss. We can either talk about retreat and pilgrimage, our topics, or you can ask about anything. And I don't think we have our question microphone today, do we? Okay, but I'll repeat the question. You can just put, yes, sir.
I have a recommendation.
Uh-huh.
If you would like to do retreat, you can go down to Frankfurt.
Oh, Frankfurt, yeah.
And meditate Thomas Merton's Monastery.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
Also, too, the monks chant the hours. That's the only time, basically. They go to the church and they sing the hours
of the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a breviary they follow.
Mm-hmm. There are places you can look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing Gethsemane Abbey. I have a friend, who's going to be, I'm sorry? Please. Yes. Okay. The people who needed the they're leaving now, right? Okay, people who had the refuge ceremony a couple weeks ago who didn't get their prayer things. Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for coming. So yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, rest of these go to Kathy Jackson. So it's because she's our refuge lady. She does the refuge workshop. These are small Buddhist texts. Oh, she needs one as well? Okay. Should I give it to you? Yeah, because then I'll forget. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, when people take refuge in the Buddha as their teacher, the Dharma as their path, and the Sangha as their community, sometimes they'll assemble a small shrine in their home, and they'll have an image of the Buddha to stand for the Buddha, and a little Dharma book. And these are tiny little Tibetan texts of the Heart Sutra, which one of my teachers said was the very best thing you can put on a shrine. Anyway, okay. So thanks for that interlude. We got that done. Yes. Okay. So, but I have a friend who's had to wait on a waiting list to go to Gethsemane Abbey, but she's going soon, so she's very, very, she's pretty psyched about it. A lot of people like Thomas Merton, yes. Really? You did 5 days at Gethsemane? Ah. I'm so happy that you shared your journey, your 5 day journey at Gethsemane with us just now. I mean, the whole idea is just so wonderful. Yes? Great. Wonderful. I think that people, unique individuals like Thomas Merton, they are unique because they are not owned by any one tradition. Yes, he was a Catholic. Yes, he was a priest. Yes, he was monastic. But also he was a very deep thinker and a loving soul. And I think that his writing reached out to people who felt alienated in the American social milieu of the 1960s, so tumultuous, and he was able to be a voice that they could hear. And so I have a lot of reverence toward Thomas Merton. And the fact was that near the end of his life, he had many connections with Buddhist teachers, and he had gone to India and had met the Dalai Lama and was in the process of learning Buddhist meditation at the time of his death. So so I appreciate you sharing that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Realized what? Yes. Right. I think that this is the beauty of great people, holy people, is that they are very down to earth. And very ordinary. I know you have a comment, but I'd like to see if someone other than... Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, wonderful. Fantastic. Yeah, they had a connection, an interesting connection. In one of the photographs that was taken of the two of them, they were comparing monastic belts. It was very cute. Again, very ordinary. And I like what you had to say about silence. The idea that being silent during a retreat may at first feel like a restriction and an unnatural restriction, very much like sitting in meditation at first seems like an unnatural restriction, that you have to place your attention on something, and then when your attention wanders, you bring it back. That might first feel a little restrictive, but in the end, what it does is it allows some freedom and some spaciousness to arise. And I think that that's the key piece, because when we notice our individual thoughts, we can begin to see how those individual thoughts influence how we experience the world. And we can begin to make small changes in those individual thoughts and hopefully bring about some thoughts that are coming from a deeper and better place in us. So, we have time for one or two more, if there's one or two more. Yes, one and two. May I repeat I'll try to repeat your question for the recording so that other people listening to the recording will understand the context of the answer. The questioner is asking about how to work with change, because even simple changes can be difficult because we're used to our old behaviors, and so taking on new behaviors is not easy. And you use the example of quitting coffee. Like you say, okay, tomorrow I'm not drinking coffee, but then you wake up and you have this craving for this coffee, and how do you change habits that you know are good for you to change? I think that when I look at what Kempo Kartarovice, my teacher, has said about this, he said that the change is very slow and gradual. You cannot always just make a decisive, I'm going to change this. He said, what you need to do is think about the benefit of that change. Imagine in your mind that change. I want to be healthier, therefore I am not going to eat this food that's bad for me. Let's use that as the example. Because some people say that coffee is actually okay and good for you, so we won't use that one as an example. My coffee friends will just not agree. Let's say that there's a food that's bad for us that we really like, and we have to give that food up. So what Rinpoche says is, in the morning when you wake up, you think about the benefits of that change. When you wake up, today to be healthy, I'm going to try to tame. You see, the word is tame, T-A-M-E, tame. You're not going to quit. You're going to tame this habit of craving this thing. And so then during the day, you watch your craving. You just watch it. And when you experience it, you can say, I remember the benefit of not eating this food that's so bad for me. And then you can say, and then you can actually use Dharma practice. There's a slogan in the Lojong teachings that goes like this: three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. So when you crave that thing, you can think, oh, craving, that's a like a mental poison. So I take on the craving of not just myself, but all beings. May all of the craving that all beings experience, may we all be free of this kind of craving. And furthermore, may we become Buddhas, which is the complete freedom from craving. May we please have that. And then at the end of the day, you look back and you say, how did I do with my taming today? Oh, I didn't do so well here. Oh, here I did better. So you rejoice in the good and say, I did well on this occasion. This occasion, oh, not so well. So I prayed to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to purify any negative things that I did, and I rejoice in all of the good things that I did. And then tomorrow, I'm going to keep going and keep trying again. So it's like that. You think of the benefits of the change, and then you can do this with losing your patience. For example, I lose my patience a lot. So sometimes Rinpoche says, if you have a bad habit of mind, you have to also think about it like this, like, oh, patient people are so well loved, you know? And I want to be like that. I want to be a person who's well loved because I'm more patient. So I'm thinking I'm going to try my best not to get angry at these people who I have no patience with. So I'm going to try to tame my anger. Again, you can't get rid of it. But you slowly can tame it. I have a friend who works in addiction treatment, treating people with addiction. And she said some people just cannot give up the thing that is completely bad for them. They can't give it up 100%. So what they do is they reduce the harm. It's a theory of recovery called harm reduction, where you don't do as much of the harmful thing. You do less and make that your goal. And then this is also a way that is used in Western psychology. And I love how Buddhism is very loving and like, okay, we are human, so we're going to change. We're going to change, but we're going to change slowly. And I think the harsher we are on ourself, the harsher we judge ourself for not making our goal, this is like putting that cat in the closet and closing the door. We're imprisoning ourselves in some attitude that's harsh. Whereas if we just leave the door open a little bit and say, I'm going to gradually change, it's going to happen. And then you increase the things that are the opposite. Instead of eating the bad food, eat food that's really healthy for you and good for you, and emphasize adding that. And with impatience, if you're trying to tame your impatience, increase your love. Sit on your cushion and practice sending love to yourself. Practice sending love to all beings. And that will help automatically with the impatience, if that's the habit you're trying to change. So try to reduce the thing that's not so good by thinking of the benefits. And then don't be too hard and too judging on yourself. And then the third thing is try to increase the opposite thing, the thing you really want to train in, whether it's love or better eating. Does that make sense? For me, I had to change certain things that I ate. And so what I did was I increased, I had to decrease one bad thing. And so I had to increase like vegetables and fruit. And that helped me a lot. Also made my cholesterol numbers better. So anyway, so thank you for your question. And this will be the last question. I know. I know. I know. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. I know. Right. Yeah. Right. I really thank you for that comment, because I do think this was one of the things that touched me the most by my period of silence in 3-year retreat. By the way, I did speak once during the 6 months I was silent at 3-year retreat. I apologized to a bug that was being relocated. We would get these sort of ugly bugs that would show up in the 3-year retreat place, and I was the bug control specialist because nobody else was brave enough to go touch these things. I would not touch them either. I would just use a cup and a piece of cardboard and take it. So I got this really ugly beetle that was in the wood pile, and I relocated it to the wood pile outside, and then I realized it was January and the bug was going to die, so I said, oh, I'm sorry. I apologized to the bug. So in the 6 months that I was silent in 3-year retreat, that really was one of the things that impressed me, was that that touched me, was that I didn't have to impress somebody. I didn't have to assert my thing, whatever my self thing was, entertainment, or my self thing is you have to love me because I do X. You know what I mean? And it's like there's this, it was wonderful. It was really wonderful to just be able to be. And I do agree. The artist who's passed away now, Andy Warhol, once said, in the future, everyone will be world famous for 15 minutes. And I think it was actually a visionary statement, because it was almost as though he knew about the internet, although he didn't know about the internet. And everyone can be world famous for 15 minutes. There's a wonderful musical play on Broadway right now called Dear Evan Hansen, about a fictional story about a young man who becomes world famous for 15 minutes based on a lie, and that he's a good person. The lie is that he's a good person. And then when that's found out, wow, what happens? And so I think that this happens to us, that everybody is identifying, I'm a this, I'm a that, and I hate you because you're not me, and I have a right to hate you because you're bad. Like, how did we make that up? And I feel as though some of the things that that we feed to ourselves, certain types of media that we feed to ourselves, don't get me started on journalism, because this will be a lot longer answer, but the short answer is that a lot of journalism today is lazy in that it's opinion-based. And so my opinion is disagreeing with your opinion, therefore we fight, and that's good ratings on TV. So a lot of people, they like fighting, and so they watch fighting. And I think it's really bad for us. And I think with the planet heating up, it's not going to get better. So we have to kind of think about how we're going to take care of ourselves. How are we going to nurture and take care of ourselves so that we don't strike out? And I think that's the challenge. Say that. Oh, well, sure. I know. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and I hear that. It's challenging for all of us. Well, we have to stop here for today. But I just want to thank all of you. What a marvelous group of people. It always touches me, because you bring your sincerity here, and you bring your love of silence and meditation here, and your love of the Four Noble Truths, you bring that here. And it's my hope that you take away from today a little tiny wish. I know maybe you have many responsibilities at home and job and family, and there's just no way you could even take a half a day off for a retreat. But make the aspiration in your heart. May I someday be able to do some retreat. Kemper Vichy told me to do that. He said, make that aspiration someday. May I be able to do some retreat. And then, you know, he said, if you keep making that aspiration slowly, it will happen. So there's a young man from our group who made that aspiration, and he's in three-year retreat right now, and that's Adam Berner. So keep him in your thoughts and prayers because he's in retreat. Woo-hoo. Let's sit quietly and dedicate the goodness of this session. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all suffering beings. May all beings everywhere be free from suffering, come to happiness, and then to Buddhahood. And coming to Buddhahood, may they emanate in all directions and benefit sentient beings endlessly. We dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you.